As a special surprise thank you, everyone listening to the Ron Van Dam Show today will receive a free photograph of Ron holding a ferret. Yeah, we don't know why he's holding a ferret either. But he's the boss. So there's the ferret. This is the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I am Ron Van Dam. You got him. Yeah, no substitutes here. I'm doing this thing today. All right. Happy Friday. Looking forward to Friday. Looking forward to Saturday and Sunday. Heat wave, temperatures in the 90s, in the high 90s probably. With the humidity, it'll feel like 100 and something. So, fun, huh? Nothing makes me feel happier than sweat pouring from my body on a hot day where you can't breathe and you're told by the experts, don't go outside. Fantastic. Enjoy your summer. I think in Arizona it's supposed to be 400 degrees in the shade, but it's a dry heat. All right, let's get started. You comfortable? Good. How you feeling? All right? That's nice. It's hard to do a comedy show when this isn't so funny anymore. And I'm referring to the virus thing. I know, that's not why you came here. I get it. I won't take too long with this. But it's just, it just has to be said. It is the perfect storm of stupidity by a stupid president and stupid people in the country. We find ourselves in a worse situation than when we even started. It's amazing. It's amazing. Everybody thought at the beginning, including this Trump guy, that as soon as the warm weather came, the virus doesn't like warm weather, doesn't spread as much, doesn't like it. So it'll just magically go away. The president's words, quote unquote, it'll magically go away. It didn't. It stayed. We magically became stupider. That's what happened. Now the southern part of the country and various other states, the majority of states in this country, are having record-breaking deaths, hospitalizations, people in ICUs, and a record number of positive cases by all ages. It's become more than a pandemic. It's become a your ass is in big trouble now kind of thing. We are not handling this well because of poor leadership in the White House, or no leadership, and stupid people in the country who say, I don't have to wear a mask if I don't want to, it's America. And then the weather got warmer, and instead of this virus just saying, it's too hot for me here, I'm not going to virus anymore, instead of the virus doing that, it started spreading more because the stupid idiots in this country started going to the beaches, started gathering in large groups. The protests, very much worth it because results are coming from it. Great. But not, it was a perfect storm of not a good idea to gather in large groups like that. Although the point had to be made, I get it. Perfect storm of something going wrong. That passed to some great extent. Now it's the beaches and the bars. The beaches and the bars. And those states that love their beaches and their bars and open them wide open with very few restrictions. And in some states, no masks required in public at all. This is the result. Now the economy is on the teetering board again of great failure and people not being able to afford things, and shelter in place is in your face pretty soon. And now we're going to go backwards with the closing of stores and many of the things that we opened, like the beaches where people gather and just sit close to each other and say, well, they look fine, so I'm not going to worry about it. I don't want to look like a dork, wear a mask. This is what happened, and it's the United States. Thank you very much. Some states are handling this really, really well, like all of New England, because the governors are on top of it. There's leadership involved. And then you go to where the leadership should be, and that's where Trump is. And yesterday, in the Rose Garden at the White House, Trump held it looked like a rally for his reelection is what it looked like. You're not supposed to use that that's supposed to be for announcements and important things, not for campaign rallies. But on the White House lawn, Trump did not, and I repeat, did not address the virus at all, as if it didn't exist. Instead, listen to this minute soundbite. This is what he talked about.
Gasoline prices, you look today, I think it was $1.99. At the same time, we saved our oil companies. We're now the largest, since we've been here, the largest energy source in the world. Nobody's even close, so it's great. But we saved them. They had a hard time a number of months ago, and frankly, for a long time, but we've saved them. But $1.99, they were telling me, in some cases lower than that, we're bringing back consumer choice and home appliances so that you can buy washers and dryers, shower heads and faucets. So shower heads, you take a shower, the water doesn't come out. You want to wash your hands, the water doesn't come out. So what do? You just stand there longer, or you take a shower longer? Because my hair, I don't know about you, but it has to be perfect. Perfect. Dishwashers, you didn't have any water, so the people that do the dishes, you press it, and it goes again, and you do it again and again. So you might as well give them the water because you'll end up using less water. So we made it so dishwashers now have a lot more water. And in many places, in most places of the country, water is not a problem. They don't know what to do with it. It's called rain. They don't have a problem. And old-fashioned incandescent light bulbs, I brought them back.
How do you even comment on that? Not one word about the virus in his entire appearance yesterday at the White House, Thursday, I should say. I don't understand it. It's freaking scary. Well, because Trump feels that it's just going to go away someday, but it didn't, and it's not.
The virus, they're working hard. Looks like by April, in theory, when it gets a little warmer, it miraculously goes away. I hope that's true. But we're doing great in our country. China, I spoke with President Xi, and they're working very, very hard. And I think it's going to all work out fine. Rough stuff, I tell you, rough, rough stuff. But I think it's going to work out good. We only have 11 cases, and they're all getting better.
That was back April. Okay, that's enough. My word to you, I mean, I'm no highfalutin politician or anything like that, but I think I'm a man with common sense, and I think you're a person of common sense. Wear your mask when you go out in public. Stay away from people who don't live in the same place with you, the same apartment, the same house, whether they be family members or not. Distance yourself, wear a mask. That's what we did at the outset, and slowly over time, it worked. The numbers went way down. We had it under control. And then the warm weather popped up, And we started crowding the beaches and crowding each other and not wearing a mask because we didn't have to. And then the bars opened up and some of the restaurants not doing it properly. And it all came tumbling back down at us. And now we're on the verge of wondering if school should open, when by the time we hit September at this rate, there's no way schools will open. Stores will shut down. You'll be asked to shelter again. And we'll be way back in the economic depths of hell. And it's all because we had no leadership from the top. We have no supplies. We have no supplies for first responders, for nurses, no masks. None of the necessary equipment to do this. Not enough beds, not enough testing to find out who has it and who doesn't. Or if you do get tested, you have to wait over a week to find out. By then, too late, you've infected so many more people. It's a virus where in children and young people, it doesn't even show up as symptoms at all, yet can be passed on in full. It's a problem. The mask is the answer that keeps the numbers down to the point where we can have a somewhat normal situation until we get a vaccine, which could be around the corner, may not be. In the meantime, don't go backwards. You go forwards. All right, I'm done talking about this. Thank you very much. Thank you, 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 thank you. All right, let's get back to the comedy. I know it's difficult to do, but what the hell? You should be eating pig parts.
Ain't always easy these days to know what to give your kids for snacks. Sugary this, high fructose that. Heck, even the stuff they call natural ain't always natural. But there's one snack when your kids ask for it, you know exactly what you're giving them.
I want piggy parts. I want piggy parts.
Professor Parker's preserved piggy parts are 100% all natural salt preserved pig parts. What parts, you ask? Well, some folks would call them scraps or ears or hoofs, but kids just call them delicious. And with their stiff, leathery texture, one Professor Parker's preserved piggy part will last a kid all afternoon. That's what we call value. So stock up now for school. You'll find them at the end of the pet food aisle in original, barbecue, or vinegar, garlic, teriyaki, onion, habanero, pineapple flavor. Give them a try and you'll see why kids say,
That's some good piggies.
Professor Parker's preserved piggy parts.
Before we go any further, I did want to mention there was something very interesting to do and very wonderful in the Boston area. If you happen to be in the Boston area, this is different and it's like really safe. This is an outdoor thing. It's the Sunday evening jazz cruise on the Northern Lights harbor boat. This is incredible. There's a great jazz ensemble called the Blue Motion Jazz, and they are incredible. It's an hour and a half tour of the harbor, but no talking tour. You just sit back and you enjoy the jazz performance, and there's cocktails and that kind of stuff on the upper deck. It's wonderful. They have it properly spaced. It's totally safe. You're really in the outdoors. They're limiting the number of tickets so that it is safe. It's a beautiful time to do it, especially with the hot weather. You can be out there in the harbor where it's cooler. It's fantastic. It's boston-sailing.com, boston-sailing.com. And then you search for Northern Lights Sunday Evening Jazz Cruise. Sunday Evening Jazz Cruise on Northern Lights. It's an hour and a half from 7 to 7:30, I believe. No, it's from 7 to 8:30. 7 to 8:30 is the cruise. You'll see all of it. It's fantastic. Just go to the website. Wonderful stuff. Tickets are still available if you act now. Give them a call. Okay, it's a Sunday Evening Jazz Cruise. The Blue Motion Quartet Trio. They're fantastic. You want to give them a call at 617-951-2460. Northern Lights Classic Harbor Line, the Boston Harbor, and you're looking for the Sunday evening jazz from 7 to 8:30. Phone number again, 617-951-2460. Donald. This is like way above your pay grade. You have no idea what you're doing, do you? Well, sir, I have an interesting guest coming up later in the program. He's an expert on noses. Excuse me, Ron. What did you say? Yeah. He's a doctor of noses. Oddly enough, I don't pay much attention to my nose, to be honest with you. I know it's there. It's smack in the center of my face. Couldn't they have put the nose somewhere else where it wouldn't be as obvious? Or maybe the hair on your head would cover it? But no, it's smack in the middle of the face. People get nose jobs. Why? Because it's so prominently, like, just placed in the middle of the face. Right under the eyes, right above the mouth, right in the center of the face. And I brush my teeth every day. I floss, whatever that means. I stick a string between my teeth and go back and forth in a saw motion. Is that what flossing is? I forget. I even at one point had a water pick. Yeah, I picked my teeth with water. I never understood that either. But I take care of my teeth at least twice a day. And, yeah. I sometimes I'll stick a Q-tip in my ear, which I'm not supposed to do because it says on a box, don't do that. And I'll see this yellow wax coming out of it, this waxy yellow buildup. And it's very satisfying to get that stuff out of there. Not that I can hear better, but psychologically I think I can hear better, but I can't. I wash my face. Sure I do. Yeah, I take care of my eyes. Yeah, if there's a little crust in the, you know, forming in the at the end, I know it's disgusting, but you know it. We take that out. The nose, I don't clean it. I don't. I thought it was a self cleaning thing, like a Roomba vacuum cleaner. I really did, but then I stopped to think what I do with my nose. What did I do with my nose as a kid? What do you do when you're driving in your car and you're on a highway and you're in traffic? You look into the next person's car because there's nothing else to do. And sometimes that person's hot. Not a bad thing to look at when you're stuck in traffic. And basically you're seeing people picking their nose. We don't know what they do with the stuff that that comes out of the nose. I assume it's in the car somewhere. Collecting. But that's what we do. We clean our nose with our dirty freaking hands, touching cell phones, doorknobs, remote controls, our ass. I mean, our fingers are filthy. They are our claws, our implements. And then what do? We stick them in our nose and we pick the stuff that's disgusting, slimy, goopy. Sometimes it's hardened. It's just a potpourri of crap in there. How does it get there? I don't know. It's manufactured by the body and it's sent up to the nose to sit there until you pick it out. What a horrible thing in the center of our head this thing is. You got any pimples? They're probably on your nose. It's crazy, man. I've told this story before. I'll tell it one more time. And then I'll retire the story. My brother and I used to play hide and seek in our house when we were growing up. We were imaginative kids. We said, what should we do? Let's come up with a great game. How about hide and seek, the game that everybody plays? Okay, that sounds good. And either my brother or myself would go into a room and hide our eyes, and then the other brother would go running and hiding somewhere, and I guess the object of the game would be that you're never found again for the rest of your life. You're just sitting in the closet because nobody went in there to find you, but you can't come out, then you'll lose. I think most of the missing children on milk cartons were playing hide and seek and are hiding somewhere in their house. I really think that's where they are. One would hope. I remember my brother was in his room and he was counting. He was counting down from 10. I had 10 seconds to find a place to hide where he wouldn't find me forever. And he started counting down. 10, 9, 8, like there was going to be a rocket launch of some sort. And I would go scrambling. And I ran into my parents' bedroom. And my parents' bedroom. And I, in the closet, no, they'll find me there. I can make believe I'm clothing hanging from a hanger, but no, my brother will look there. I know where he'll never look, under the bed. Seriously, it's the first place everybody looks. But in my infancy manner of intelligence at that time in my life, I've since developed considerably. I thought hiding under the bed would be like, this is amazing. No one will ever find me. So I scrunched down, and I was little then, and I got under the bed, and I wiggled in under my, you know, on my back under the bed, on my father's side of the bed. My father slept on the right side from the foot, and my mother would be facing the bed on the she'd be on the left side. So I got under my father's side. And I'm lying there on my back, and I hear my brother scrambling around the house looking for me. My brother wasn't great at this game, never thought of looking under the bed. And I'm lying there, and I'm getting a little bit bored, and I figure he's not going to find me, or if he does, that'll be horrible. And, you know, I'm just kind of feeling around under the bed, and I feel, you know, that they've got the slats under the bed that the mattress lies upon. And I'm feeling one of the slats, and it's kind of like bumpy and lumpy. And I thought, oh my goodness, this slat is giving way. What kind of wooden slat is this? And then I continue to feel down the slat and some of the other slats under the bed on my father's side. And it's like stalactites and stalagmites. It's like a cave where some type of weird thing is forming on the roof of the cave. And I'm running my hand up and down this. It feels like a flow chart for something, you know. It's just, and it's bumpy and it's hard and it's weird. And my brother is looking for me, and it pops into my head, in my little child head, it pops into my head that, oh my goodness, this is not a normal slat under a bed. It's caked in my father's nose boogers. My father apparently would lie in bed at night watching TV, and he'd pick his nose, and all that slimy, crusty crap that came out of my father's nose, he would reach under the bed where nobody would ever find it. And he would wipe it with his finger on one of the slats under the bed after reaching down underneath. And I discovered the pot of gold, so to speak. The Mount Vesuvius of nose crap. Well, my brother found me, and I couldn't wait to get out from under that bed, and I told him the story, and I said, come here, give me your hand, I'm going to run it under the bed, and you're going to feel like something you wouldn't. And we never said a word to our father. I believe my brother and I both threw up at that point because it was so freaking disgusting. And I'm talking about boogers that were probably there like for 10 years, a 10-year collection. It's not like collecting stamps or anything. We never told our father what we found because we didn't want to embarrass him. And it just, you know, you just don't do that. And that story stayed with me. Every once in a while when I get the urge to stick my finger in my nose, I think about that story. And I tend not to do that kind of thing. I don't know if you do, and I don't know where your stash is, but stop it. It's disgusting. Someday somebody's going to find that stash, and it's going to be very embarrassing and probably not very healthy. The lessons that we learn in life, kind of amazing, isn't it? Anyway, this is all a lead up to my guest, who is an expert on noses and what we do with our noses and the germs that are in the nose and how do you actually clean your nose. I don't even know. How do you clean your nose? Is it power washing? I don't know what to do. I used to take a tissue and form a little drill bit at the top of the tissue. Have you ever done that? And then you stick that in your nose and stuff comes. Why are you talking about this? Why did you let me talk about this for an entire show? Because the alternative is to talk about the virus. This is better. If Trump can talk about dishwashers, light bulbs, and the pressure of water coming out of a shower head, and totally make believe the obvious doesn't exist in this world of crisis right now, then I certainly have the license to talk about noses. Okay. What a lead-in for my guest. Is he still here? All right, let's talk to my guest. Dr. Ron Singer joins us. He's an orthopedic surgeon. And we're talking about something that I don't think I've ever talked about on the air before, oddly enough, and that's our noses. And we're told constantly to wash our hands and gargle, brush your teeth. Don't recall anything happening with the hygiene of the nose, and especially with these days when we want to keep it as clean as possible, we turn to Dr. Singer to help us figure this out. How important is the nose as far as that goes?
Well, you know, it turns out that the nose is extremely important in this whole thing because it's really the nose that is the top spot for many different types of germs mm-hmm. that can gain access to your system from the nose. So it's sort of the perfect environment where these harmful germs can grow and multiply. And the nose really becomes like a revolving door, allowing germs to enter and exit the body.
Yeah. When we're told to wear a mask, you cover the mouth and the nose. And yet, there you go. I mean, I don't remember sanitizing or really, I wash my face, but I don't wash my nose. And I do, especially as a child, I think my fingers went up that thing every once in a while, my dirty fingers. Didn't think much about it then. I sure do think about it now.
Well, what's really interesting, Ron, is that sanitizing the nose, which basically just means killing the germs in the nose, it's been done in healthcare settings for decades. You know, it's been a key component of almost every hospital infection prevention program mm-hmm. for many years. In fact, in 2019, the Centers for Disease Control came out with a recommendation that every single hospitalized patient in the U.S. that is in a critical care unit, that's having any kind of major orthopedic surgery, which is really how I got involved, or is otherwise at high risk of infection, should have their nose sanitized on a regular basis while they're in the hospital. So, you know, I think what we're seeing now is this understanding of the cycle of the hands contaminating the nose and the nose contaminating the hands. Mm-hmm. And it's time now that we see this become a regular practice outside of the healthcare setting.
Yeah, especially now. It makes sense. It's throwing some reasoning into doing that. Help me understand one thing, though. The nose, unlike the mouth, the other portal of disease entry, the nose has those little hairs in it, and I always thought that they were like a little bit of a filter system where my mouth has no hairs in it, thank goodness. Is that accurate, or is that not the purpose of those little hairs?
You know, it's a really, really great question. We don't always understand the answers to those. I suspect if you're out in the desert and you're in a dust storm, it would be a heck of a filter. But you have to remember these germs, whether it's a virus, a fungus, a bacterium, these things are microscopic and they love that warm, moist, hairy, environment of the nose. And it's really the perfect environment for germs to grow and multiply, as it turns out.
I would think so. I think that one would touch their nose more frequently without thinking about it than they would putting their fingers near their mouth, I would assume.
Well, you know, Ron, it's interesting. You know, probably one of the greatest values of wearing a mask, you know, not only so that other people don't get sick from your germs, but also so you're not touching your nose.
Yes.
And that probably, as it turns out, is the most important thing. And you're right. We inadvertently touch our nose over 100 times a day, about you know, every 4 minutes in the waking hours.
Wow.
And if think about it for the rest of the day. I'm gonna make you think about it all day. Every time you go to your nose, you know, you're contaminating your hands and vice versa. And the rest of the day, you think about it. Every time you touch your nose, I want you to count it. And I bet you come up with dozens and dozens and dozens of times without even thinking about it.
Wow. Well, this begs the question, how do I sanitize my nose?
Well, there are a number of products that are available. You can go to the website, which is www.sanitizeyournose.org, and it lists those products. There's really only one product that's available for daily use. Mm-hmm. It's an alcohol-based nasal antiseptic that's truly formulated for the nose, and it's formulated for daily use. It's citrus-flavored. It's very, very well tolerated. I will use it routinely myself. My friends and family use it. My patients, before undergoing joint replacement, I'll use it. But you can learn about that at that website, and there's a tremendous amount of information about the other products as well.
Wow, and that's safe to use, and everything's good. I mean, okay, sounds good to me.
Yeah, it's formulated. Ron, it's truly formulated for daily use. Mm-hmm. It really is a brilliant formulation, the alcohol-based product. When we brought it into my surgery center, where we do a lot of outpatient joint replacements, I had 50 nurses that day, and they all tried it, and they all raised their hand and said, "Where do I get it?" So it's actually something that's very pleasant. It almost sort of opens you up and has that citrus flavor, and it's changed my world for sure, my understanding of how all this works.
Interesting. Now, what's this website again so that we can all go there?
www.sanitizeyournose.org.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for the information. This falls into place as we're being extra careful these days until the remedy comes along. But this is the time to get into something like this, and especially with the colder weather going to happen in a couple of months. You know, even on top of that, you want to have your arsenal of supplies with you. Dr. Singer, thank you so much for helping us out today. Again, love the first name, and best to you.
Ron, we're going to start a club of other Rons, and you and I are going to be the charter members, buddy.
I don't run into a lot of Rons, I'm going to be honest with you. It could be a small club, but that's fine.
All right. Take care. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye. And there you have it for today. Look, I'll be back again on Monday with a brand new show. I don't care where you live in this country. It's going to be freaking hot. The only thing to do is going to be to listen to this show, because you're just going to want to stay inside with a fan in your face or an air conditioning, whatever you got, man. Maybe a pool, and just listen to this show. I'll be back on Monday. Until then, I wish you peace. Wear a mask in public, please. If not for you, do it for us. Be a person.